Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered. I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as always, the unpregnant Drea Kaufman.
The no longer pregnant me. Yay!
Yay! Oh, so much fun to have you back. How is everything going
good
with the wee little lass?
She's precious and full of screams and farts and poop and all the wonderfulness that comes with having a newborn. That's awesome.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but we got this fantastic new review.
Yay!
On iTunes, and I gotta love the who it's from. Sub Wife Mom.
Okay.
that's the name, and the review says so good, 5 stars, and she said that I thoroughly enjoy listening to this podcast. I've been a Harry Potter fan since I was 12 years old, and I'm about to turn 31 now, so the works are near and dear to my heart. I've listened to a few other Harry Potter podcasts, but this one is hosted by more mature adults, and the discussions are always respectful, insightful, thoughtful, and educated. I only wish they talked longer in each episode. I listen during the day while I'm caring for my infant daughter, 5 months old, and it makes the time pass nicely. I'm looking forward to listening to all you have to say.
She's well, like the only you. One who wants us to talk longer.
Oh, that's great, though. I'm so glad she's loving listening. And apparently we're mature adults.
I know. It's like I fooled everyone. It's amazing.
Suckers!
I love this woman. We should be friends.
Yes, totally. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate the review. And, you know, one of the fun things is the show has continued to grow, and part of that has been the people reviewing us on iTunes. So really appreciate everyone who's done that. You can find the show wherever you get your podcasts, but if you are over in iTunes or in Apple Podcasts, hit us up with a star rating and review. Help more people find the show. Help it continue to go. And honestly, the best way to help a show grow is just spread it to everybody you know. Just tell everybody you know about Owlpost. You can do that on Twitter through @JoinNerdParty. You can tweet us or tweet other friends about us. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And you can also look at our own website, which is thenerdparty.com. And you can write us an email from there. If you go to thenerdparty.com/contact and you choose Owlpost, that email comes to Drea and I, and we can talk to you that way. Anytime we get mail, we're definitely willing to talk about that mail we get on the show too. So, you know, send us emails and we'll talk about your thoughts or questions or whatever before we dive into the chapters we do. So, because we enjoy talking with you guys. So, Drea, last time on Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, the fat lady's portrait had just been destroyed, and they were trying to figure out what was going on. And so this chapter, we're starting the grim defeat. I really, really do like the way this chapter starts. Dumbledore is just so wonderful.
It's true. I really like... So this chapter doesn't have a ton in it. Like, it doesn't have a lot going on, at least in the first part of it. It's kind of got two things that happen, and neither of which are really like super important to, I think, the overall plot line. But I think it's a good chapter, and I like the way they play it out here more than they do in the movie, for sure. It's more real here. It's one of those times where Rowling kind of writes about things like that are almost like real life. So they're almost boring, but they're so relatable and understandable that like you want them. You're like, there's not anything that's like terribly life-altering that happens in the first like 2/3 of this chapter, but like it's relatable and I can see something happening and everyone being ushered into one place to sleep. And like, I don't know. It just, it has like that real feel to it that I think comes over much better than it does in the movie. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
No, I agree with you, because the whole happenings of this beginning of the chapter, part of it is that I think it brings out, they kind of play this up in the movie, like Dumbledore's wacky whimsiness, but it almost comes across even better than him saying weird things here, of him just being like, oh, you're gonna need some bedding, and then all of these sleeping bags
show up,
these squishy purple sleeping bags appearing, it kind of brings to light, I felt like, in Dumbledore, that there's so much going on in his brain that, but he still has the wherewithal to think of, if I'm going to make you sleep here, you're going to need something to sleep on. And then when he creates them to sleep on, magically, it just sounds kind of crazy and wonderful of squishy purple sleeping bags. That's such intimate detail about what's being created that, like you said, you just kind of feel like you're there, and it feels real and magical and boring all at the same time. And that's really a hallmark of what she's able to do, I think, is to make you feel as though you're living through the experience with Harry, even if you've read it before. Like, I still feel as invested in what's happening at points like this than, the first time I read it. Mm-hmm. I also like that this is another opportunity for Hermione to be like, oh, honestly, has nobody read Hogwarts of History? It cracks me up every time.
That is funny. It is funny that when they're all trying to speculate on how Sirius Black could have gotten into the castle, they're like, oh, maybe he apparated and all this stuff. And she's just like sitting there seething the whole time, like eye rolling. And you can feel it in her. You can just feel how upset she is.
Well, and it's funny because as we're recording this today, I legitimately tweeted at J.K. Rowling pleading with her to write Hogwarts a History, because I feel like it would be a fascinating book to read. And I want to know what Hermione knows. So
you want to know what Hermione knows. Yeah.
Yes. The interesting thing here, too, is that I feel like the conversation that happens between Severus and Dumbledore is just slightly more interesting, in the sense that they're talking about, how Black may have gotten here, and Severus reminding him, we had a conversation about this.
I warned you.
Yeah, that this could happen, and I really like Dumbledore saying, he's like, I don't believe a single person inside this castle would have helped Black enter it. The fact that Snape's like, well, why didn't you get the Dementors to help search? And this is one of those moments where the way she writes it, Dumbledore almost kind of has like, I feel like a Gandalf moment. Remember in the movies where Gandalf would get really stern and he would kind of like grow in size, and it would kind of darken and his voice would get deeper? He does that same kind of thing, I feel like, when he says, oh, yes, they wanted to help, but I'm afraid that no Dementor is going to be crossing over the threshold of this castle while I'm headmaster. It's like you get this sense of like there is something extremely wicked about these things that Dumbledore absolutely hates.
Well, and it's Percy who brings up why the Dementors didn't come to help.
Right.
Which I think, and I remember that because Percy was really embarrassed after he said that, because he was kind of like a, oh yeah, duh kind of moment. And he felt like, I don't know, it's that moment where you're sitting in a group of people and you say something that's just inanely kind of dumb, and you say it and then someone says something back and you're like, yeah, I get that that was stupid and now I'm really embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
You get this like impression from the little bits like you were talking about with Dumbledore, kind of like the Gandalf thing, that like Dumbledore is just the world's biggest like BA. He has, there's just, you don't want to mess with him. You don't want to meet him in a dark alley. You don't want to be on the wrong side of him. But he's got such a peaceful demeanor, but like, there's still this like slight fear with him that you're just like, I'm a little scared of you in a good way, but definitely a little scared of you. And I think we definitely get more and more of that as we go through the book and we learn more about Dumbledore and more about his history and all that, especially in the very, very last book where you learn like the lessons he's learned, you know?
Yes, yes.
But yeah, you definitely get the impression that like it's one of those like little insight moments where like you're like, oh, he's a kind old man, and then he says something like that and you're like, oh snap.
Okay, yeah,
never mind.
Yeah, that's a complete OS moment. Like,
yeah,
this is not a dude to get on his bad side with. And you know, it's one of those things where again I feel like Rowling is able to do so well of just capturing characters in very small moments to let you know a lot about them.
Mm-hmm.
And she is very good at that, because I also really like that the next day the whole school is abuzz about everything, and McGonagall finally summons Harry to her office and begins to inform him about what's going on, and Harry's like, oh, I know all about that. And she's taken aback about that. Like, and so you kind of see, I found that really interesting. And I was trying to kind of figure out to myself, was she taken aback about it because Harry already knows, or is she taken aback about it because, I don't know, like, for you, I was kind of wondering what you thought specifically she was kind of flummoxed by.
So I sort of got the feeling from her in this situation that happens to me sometimes when I'm preparing to have a really difficult conversation with someone at work or, you know, at home or whatever. I'm like, I build the argument up in my head. I play it out. I argue my side. I have my, you know, I think about what the contrary argument's going to be. I think about how I'm going to sort of handle it. And then, you know, you sort of go with, you know, you roll with it, right? So you're like prepared, and then she walks in and she's like ready to state her argument and her facts and why she thinks he should be careful and all this stuff. And she's prepared for that. But what she's not prepared for is for him to be like, oh, I already know. And she's like, it's almost like her whole argument falls apart there. Like,
yes,
because it's almost
yes.
like she's trying to argue why he needs to be safe and why she wants him to do something else. And it's like, if he already knows and she doesn't have to like state her side and her objective and her like perspective, he already knows about all this danger. It just like, it catches her off guard and she no longer like has that, like that strong argument to go on. And I think I kind of get the impression like that's what it was, is that that was like the one outcome she hadn't, she expected him to be angry or scared or upset or whatever, but she probably didn't expect him to be like, oh no, I already know. Are we done here? Like,
checking in his watch. Are we done here, McGonagall? You know, like.
No, that's a really good point, because, you know, I think that she was going to flow right from what she was saying into what she was going to say next, which is, I don't think you should be practicing Quidditch. And Harry's
at
like,
night,
what?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And I love the way that he's able to get to her. And how he's like, well, you know, we have our big game coming up, and he uses her love of Quidditch and Gryffindor Quidditch to be able to get her to agree.
Who are you kidding?
Yes, it's awesome. And I kind of love that Professor McGonagall is addicted to Gryffindor Quidditch. I mean, it's just pretty awesome. And, you know, they come up with a good compromise. Madam Hooch will oversee their training sessions, which, you know, I don't know what else Madam Hooch does anyway. So, you know, why shouldn't she do that? And it allows them to be able to continue. And turns out that they're not going to be playing Slytherin because, well, Malfoy's faking it about his arm still.
Wah, wah. Yeah, I hate that kid so much.
It was so funny because I was just thinking about the
how much I hate thing. That kid.
Yes. I was reading it today, I was like, he's such a jerk. Like, he's such a turd store. Like, this.
Such a manipulative little,
yes.
like.
Yes.
Little small man.
Very small. I also love that we get introduced to a brand new character who plays for Hufflepuff. Let's just say all the girls are Twitter about.
Let's just say he sparkles when he goes in the sunlight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. He's got good hair, mm-hmm. you know. Man, that's Cedric Diggory. I love that Angelina's like, he's that tall, good-looking one, isn't he?
I like that they're all giggly. They're like, hee hee.
I get it, you know.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, boys might not be as like giggly about girls, but we still get that inside when the really beautiful girl, you know. So we try to hide it better under bravado. So even though we don't actually hide it much better,
you just yell back at Snape. About
yeah, just holler back at him. Yeah, so
you which talk back is to your professors instead.
Exactly. Which I, the fact that they have this is where you know Harry runs from Quidditch to their lesson here that they have with Defense Against the Dark Arts, and Snape is teaching because Lupin is sick. I liked this this whole little interaction. Because all of the kids, they're a lot bolder in this classroom than they are in Snape's actual classroom,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really interesting. And I think it's fun to watch the impact that Lupin's had on them in this classroom. They're like, no, you can't treat us like that in not your classroom. You know, it's like they're not going to take his crap when they're not in the dungeons.
It is funny. It's interesting to look at too how you're how creating a space and creating an environment really affects, you know, a group of people and individuals. You know, if Snape kind of teaches with fear, if you will, in his classroom, right? And so the classroom, the environment he's created is one where people don't feel empowered to speak up or ask questions or make mistakes. And then they go to a classroom where they feel supported and, you know, in a setting where they feel heard and like they can ask questions and they should be making mistakes, which is for me what I think, you know, the education system should be. And just to see how that environment can really adapt the same group of people. This is so interesting. And it really is something to even just think about for like real life when you take it into work or your family. Like, do you want to create fear and where people don't feel like they can talk? Or do you want to create an environment where people feel like they can make mistakes and still be supported and grow together? So, you know, which one do you want? Do you want a Snape classroom or do you want a Lupin classroom? And I'd argue McGonagall's classroom is kind of like a Lupin classroom too.
Yes, yes.
After we talked about a couple chapters ago with the death omen and all of that, you know, Trelawney kind of goes on the side almost like a Snape classroom in a different way, right? But she's definitely trying to scare them. And then, you know, McGonagall's got more of a, she knows something's wrong. She needs to address it before they can, you know, move on. And so she makes them feel comfortable talking about it, you know, that sort of thing. So it's just interesting to see how the different teachers create different environments for the kids and not just, you know, not just in one-on-one interactions, but they actually make a whole like classroom worth of difference, you know?
Yeah. And it's so interesting because, you know, Lupin is not feeling well. And so Snape is teaching and he keeps asking these questions. And of course, Hermione knows the answers and she keeps interjecting the answers. And finally, he just calls her an insufferable know-it-all and takes 5 points away because of what she said. And I absolutely love, and I wish this had been the movie because it's so good, because the way Rowling says this, you know, Ron, who told Hermione she was a know-it-all at least twice a week and to her face, said loudly, "You asked us a question and she knows the answer. Why ask if you don't want to be told?" Like, he's had enough of this kind of, like, BS. The fact that, look, if you don't really want the answer, don't ask the question. But somebody here knows the answer, so what's your deal, dude? And it's interesting because Snape just advances very slowly towards him and says, "You have detention," getting in his face. And you can honestly tell that Snape's been bested at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
because he reacts in the way that he does. Otherwise, he would have, if he hadn't been, he probably would have let it go.
Mm-hmm. He was punitive. But
he has to be vindictive. That's mm-hmm. his thing. He's got to be vindictive against somebody.
I really like they're in that same moment where they really paint just how despised Snape is by everyone, along those lines of where they're talking about every student glared at Snape when he called Hermione a name, even though every single one of them have called her that name at some point. Like, everyone knows that it's true. But in that moment, she wasn't trying to be a know-it-all. She was answering the questions that were being asked. And, you know, as you get older, you start to pick up on social cues that, like, yeah, he really doesn't. The smart thing here is just not to say anything, right? The way to avoid any sort of conflict is just not to say anything. But she, you know, they're all still young. And so she's like, well, I know the answer to the question, so I'm going to tell you the answer to the question. But yeah, I like how Ron sort of loses it a little bit. It's like, you know what? If you don't want to know, don't ask. Cause that I would be Ron in that moment. I'd be like, if you don't want to know, don't ask, but don't get mad when she answers your questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would get detention in this scenario.
Well, I mean, all the kids are so confused too, because he's pushing this agenda in the classroom of moving them well past where they are to a section that they're not supposed to get to till much later in the year anyway, about werewolves. And then he's going to make them write this essay all about werewolves. So he's really throwing off their groove in this class from where Lupin has it for some unknown reason. And I absolutely love Ron again. He's like, why couldn't Black have appeared in Snape's office and just finished him off for us?
Well, and it's like the whole like scenario is like when your parents argue, right? Like, it's like listening to parents or bosses at work when two bosses are arguing and you're like standing in the office and you're like, this is so awkward. I don't know what to do, because he's like ripping apart what Lupin is teaching them. But it's not their fault if that's what they're being taught. You know what I mean? Like, he's tearing apart the other teacher who's not there to defend himself or even have anything to say on the matter. Besides the fact that, have you not met the first two-year teachers that they had for this subject?
Like,
the
so
last,
good.
They did not learn anything last year. Let's just be honest here. Gilderoy Lockhart didn't do crap for them. So like, this is the first teacher who's legitimately teaching them something. It's like almost unfair. It's like so unfair to watch. You're just like so angry listening to him tear apart Lupin when you know there's nothing that the kids can do and there's nothing that Lupin can say because he's not there. You're just, mm-hmm. it's just one of those things where you're like, he's just being a dick for the sake of being a dick. Like, damn it, Snape.
Well, and that's the frustrating thing about people like that. And what I love is the way that she writes him, because there are so many people that you do kind of run into in your life that are like that. They like being a-holes because that's what they are.
Well, it makes them feel better.
It makes them feel better about themselves. It gives them a power trip that makes them feel better about themselves. And, you know, when you use that against people, you know that it's not the people you're using it against that really have the issue. It's you. And that's the kind of the thing that just kind of keeps in that cycle. It keeps going, you know, and it's just a sad place to find anyone. And, you know, I guess I love that about her stories, because when you realize that, you have to stop for a minute and ask yourself, you know, where do maybe I do that? You know, and we might not always like the answer. And that's the cool thing, is that she uses all of these different characters and the ways in which they interact and the ways in which they act towards each other to, I think, help guide us towards, you know, good, proper, right, and true behavior. And we know it when we see it because of the way she writes the story. And we instinctively understand the, not just the unfairness, but the untrueness of the way in which Snape treats people. Because there's a difference between fairness and treating people in a true, respectful manner. And he just does not do that, at least so far in this series. And it's like Malfoy, he's just so frustrating as a character because of it.
Yeah, and at this stage, the kids, at least, and from a writing perspective, almost the reader, is not mature enough. The story is not mature enough. Not us as readers. We're not... Okay.
No, remember, we're mature ones because that's what the review said.
Mature adult voices. but this point in the story and this point for the kids, I'm thinking from their perspective, we're not mature enough to understand that him being a jerk says more about him than it does about them. Yep. and who's being berated and that sort of thing. Like, Harry isn't mature enough to know that this doesn't have to do with Harry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah. It's hard. It makes it hard to read, and it makes it, you know, you just hate the character because, like, he's just such a jerk, you know. And I love that this is where we start, and then that's part of what I love about the series in general, is that we start with them at, I'm having a brain fart due to lack of sleep, like 11, 12, right? And we go until they're 17, 18. And you get to grow those relationships with them. So we're kind of at the point where they're starting to become teenagers, kind of. And so they're starting to get balls and tell, you know, Snape that he's kind of a jerk in the middle of class, and they get detention for it. But I think we're still not quite there yet to understand that from a character perspective. The characters aren't mature enough yet to quite understand that Snape's a jerk for a reason, but it doesn't have to do with any of them.
No. And I think that's going to be the thing that's so interesting. And this is, I do think that this is one of the places where, again, Rowling's writing really shines, is that she will not leave these characters as cardboard cutouts. She is going to spend the rest of the series really defining who they are and why they are. And I like that. You know, for the most part, every single character does get some definition to them. So they become three-dimensional. And that's great. You know, it's one of the most fascinating things about the series. The last part of the chapter actually revolves around the Quidditch game. And I thought it was really interesting that Harry's having a lot of trouble sleeping the night before. And he gets up super early because Peeves is being a jerk again to him and wakes him up in the middle of the night. After he's finally gotten asleep, and then he can't go back to sleep. So he just gets up and goes and hangs out in the common room and finds Crookshanks. He keeps trying to get up to the boys' room so that he can find Scabbers, and Harry keeps shooing him away, and I just think that's really funny.
Well, and it's so like,
stop it, you dang cat.
It's so cat-like. I mean, our cat always tries to sneak out the back door whenever we go in the backyard, because we'll let him out sometimes because he's like huge and can't get over the fence anyway. But so like he always tries to sneak out when you open the door. He like, you could see him like waiting to dart for it. So that's kind of what I had envisioned, is that when Harry opens the door to leave his room, like Crookshanks is just right there waiting to dash in, you know, and it's like, dang it, cat. Has to like shoo him out all the time.
No, absolutely. My mother-in-law has lots of cats, and I'm not really a cat person. And yes, they kind of, and even their dogs too, they just kind of tend to get everywhere all the time. And it bothers me. So I totally get Harry's frustration right now. Luckily, breakfast happens, and they can finally get to Quidditch, where it is an awful day to be playing Quidditch, because the wind is howling, the rain is coming inside like awfully. Harry can't see out of his glasses. I mean, this game is ridiculous. They may be up 50 points here when he calls a timeout. Finally, Wood calls a timeout, but this just sounds awful.
I when I was reading this part of the chapter, I really like I went. They're talking about the rain and how like strong it is and the wind is blowing. And I just kept replaying in my head. There's a old Family Guy episode where there's like a storm in Quahog, and they go, Ollie Williams with weather. And he's like, it's raining sideways. Like, that's all I can think of the whole time. It's like, it's raining sideways, guys. because of how like epic it is. There is one little part in this like Quidditch match that I don't quite follow how it happened. It's Hermione appears in the middle of their timeout.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why. Like I get what she does in that she, you know, enchants his glasses so he can actually see out them, but I don't understand where she came from.
It seems like that where they have their timeout is close to, I guess, part of the stands, and so Hermione just kind of comes over to them. That's like the thought process that I had. But I actually love this little moment of her imperviousing his glasses so the rain won't get on them. He can see. It's such a cute little like classic Hermione moment that I kind of wish was in the movie, because it's just so Hermione. It's so wonderful. Like, she just kind of appears out of nowhere. I got a solution to your problem with magic. You know, like, nobody else has thought of this on the team. They're all wizards, but only Hermione has thought of this. And it's so great.
I love how, and the response is like, Wood looks as if he could have kissed her. Like, he's yes. So excited for this little thing. And she just like disappears in the crowd. Like, it's just one of those weird moments where like, okay, I get it, but it's almost like out of place for her to like show up in the middle of the huddle. Mm-hmm. Like, she would have had to have known the huddle was being, I don't know. It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me, like logistically. It's cute.
It reminds me of the fourth movie where she's behind one side of the curtain and Harry's on the other at the championship, you know? And yeah. She like flings it open and hugs Harry and everything. Like, it reminds me kind of like that moment. Like, she just happens to be close to where they take their time out.
Herself there. Yeah,
exactly. It is a really scary thing though, because as they're playing Quidditch, it's going better. And as Harry is diving for the snitch, he first sees the Grim highlighted in the clouds. And then as he's diving, he sees hundreds of Dementors at the bottom of the Quidditch pitch. And he starts to hear this awful screaming. And then he hears a woman in his head saying things like, "Not Harry, no, not Harry, stand aside, you silly girl, stand aside. Not Harry, please, no, take me instead, kill me." And it's just like, it may be one of the most awful things that we have read so far.
Mm-hmm.
It is like, I was reading this and they don't have this in the movie. And it's breaking my heart as I'm reading it.
It's kind of in the movie in that you just hear like mutterings and screams. And it's terrifying in this like obscure sort of way. But yeah, not as specific or dark as it is in the book, for sure.
No, this, I feel like this starts to get very specific as to what this is. And it feels like it would be hard for you not to piece together what this is.
Right.
This is Voldemort killing his mother.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last moments of his mother's life. And it's just, it's an awful thing to have to be witnessing, or if you're Harry, to be hearing.
Be experiencing in some
way. Yeah, to have to experience the worst moment of your life, the one that you're probably glad that you could never have experienced, now you are experiencing. That this is dragging that, you know, memory out of the back of your mind, your baby mind. It is awful. And then, of course, he wakes up to find out that they lost the game because of him, and his broom got destroyed. So if it couldn't get any worse, it did.
Just a bad day for Harry.
It is kind of a no-good, very bad, rotten day for Harry. This chapter, I feel like, it really wraps up in a way that makes me want to continue on into the next chapter to see where we're going, because I feel like we're starting to really get to the meat of things. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like some things are really going to start to get revealed, and I can't wait to be back next week to talk about the Marauder's Map.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yay!
So, Drea, if anybody wants to talk to you about your recently found motherhood and anything else Harry Potter related or anything else going on, where can they find you?
So if you want to come check out my baby flooded social media now, because it's basically just pictures of my child and
all the time.
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN. And I want to say that yesterday we had someone tweet us their Halloween costume with the little zombies.
Oh,
it
was
great. It was so great. And it was so exciting. So I just wanted to say thanks for that, because it does make me feel special to get random little tweets like that.
Yes, that was so cute. And we really appreciate everybody who does reach out to us on Twitter. We've had a lot of that. All of the reviews, of course, and everything on Facebook. It does mean a lot. We have so much fun doing this show, and we love sharing our love of Harry Potter with you guys. So thanks, and keep that, reaching out. Keep it coming. So it's a lot of fun. You can find me if you want to reach out at Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram under the same name. I don't have a baby flooded Instagram or anything, and no babies. So you can also find me here on the network. I'm talking with John Mills about Star Wars over on Aggressive Negotiation. That's a blast. So make sure you check that out. I'm over on the Trek FM network with the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show. We're doing so much fun stuff over there. I mean, we've done Stranger Things. Stranger Things 2 is coming up. We've got Bond coming up. We have Thor Ragnarok, Justice League. I mean, we're going to be so jam-packed this fall. It's great. So make sure you check that out. I'm doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then last but not least, I do a show with my good friend Courtney called Cinema Stories. And that is all about film through the lens of faith. And we just recently did a really fun show about our favorite holiday movies. So check that out. But thank you, everyone, for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.